Welcome to Wealthability, where we're always learning how to make way more money and at the same time pay way less taxes. This is Tom Wheelwright, founder and CEO of Wealthability and your host for this training program. What if you could literally reduce your taxes while increasing your cash flow and your wealth all at the same time? Today, we're going to discuss how investing in real estate can permanently lower your taxes while increasing both your cash flow and your wealth. We're going to start out with Robert Kiyosaki's cash flow quadrant to illustrate why this is. If you look at the four ways that we make money as an employee, self-employed, big business owner, or professional investor, then you see, if you analyze, which I do all the time, the tax rates, you'll find that an employee making a lot of money, doing well, will pay about 40% in taxes worldwide. If you're self-employed, your tax rate now goes up because now you're paying both the employees and the employer's share of taxes. If you're a big business owner, your taxes go down typically to about 20%. And if you're a professional investor, it can go down to 0%. Now we're going to focus today on professional investor and 0%. So that's what I'm very excited about, because what we're going to focus on is the tax benefits and how to get the most tax benefits out of real estate. Real estate is a little bit of magic. Now, let me explain how this works visually. So let's say that we have your financial statements. And in your financial statements, you have your income, you have your expense. Then you also have your balance sheet. That's your income statement. Now you have your balance sheet, which includes your assets and your liabilities. Now your assets and liabilities, that's what you own and what you owe, right? Okay, assets put money in your pocket. Liabilities take money out of your pocket. Let's just be clear on the definition. Now, typically, a poor person, when they earn income, it comes in and it goes out. That's what a poor person does. A middle-class person, that money comes in, it goes into a liability, and then it comes out. There's your middle. Now, what do you mean by a liability? Well, I mean, you know, boat, car, house, right? These are all things that take money out of our pocket. This is what the middle class does with their money. This is why middle class always looking for a raise, right? Got to increase our standard of living because we've got liabilities. What do the rich do? The rich, their money comes in and it goes down here into the asset column. And it's going to go in one of four types of assets. It's going to go in as into a business asset, real estate, paper, or commodities. Now what happens is, if you're a professional investor, then the tax law works to take that money, that business, real estate, paper makes, and what we do is we bring it back in income, and it actually lowers our taxes. So our taxes actually go down when we buy the asset. I'm going to explain that. That's the subject of today's training. So how to have your taxes actually go down. When the taxes go down, what happens? You buy more assets, creates more money. Your taxes go down again. Buy more assets, make more money. This is how the rich get richer. This is the fundamental key to building wealth. Now we're going to focus on one asset class only today, and that asset class is real estate. And the reason is that real estate is the best tax shelter uniformly around the world. I've never been to a country, and I've been to dozens of countries, all six continents. Every country I've ever been to, real estate done right provides amazing tax benefits. Now, the details are different from country to country. From a practical standpoint, though, the concepts I'm going to go through today are available in most countries. So whether you're in the U.S., Canada, U.K., France, China, Australia, South America, chances are these concepts in some form are going to be accurate for your country. Now you just have to sit down with your tax advisor and get the actual details. That's why tax advisors are so critical. So let's look at the top tax benefits of real estate. I'm going to give you the top four real estate tax benefits, because there are literally hundreds. I could spend days on this topic. My professional background, for those of you who don't know, is heavy in real estate. My clients for years have been developers, professional investors, home builders, contractors. That's my core industry expertise. And so I love real estate. And then, of course, started investing in real estate. And a lot of our clients, I'd say 80% of our clients invest in real estate. So this is something that is near and dear to my heart. Now, number one, top deduction. I'm going to go through each of these in detail, but I'm just going to outline them right now. The number one is deduct expenses. All right. We have to have a business purpose. So we have to have a business. It has to be ordinary and it has to be necessary. This is why it's important to be a professional real estate investor. A casual real estate investor doesn't necessarily get all these benefits. Right? So a professional real estate investor gets all the benefits. That you have to be in a trade or business to get all the benefits. Okay, trade or business means you're actively involved in this business. So you can deduct any expense. You can deduct any expense in any country if it's a business expense and you do it the right way. Now, I had an experience in Chile a couple of years ago. I was talking about deducting cars, and he came up to me and said, "You can't do that here." So Robert Kiyosaki has me get up on stage the next day and explain how to deduct automobile expense in Chile. You know, I spent an hour in the Chilean tax law. Still, we figured out how to do it. So there's always a way. And in fact, afterwards, the attorney came up to me and he said, "I would never have thought of doing that." He says, "That absolutely works. I would never thought of doing that." So you get to deduct expenses. That's a huge tax benefit of being a professional real estate investor. Number two, depreciation. In my book, Tax-Free Wealth, Chapter 7, I talk about the magic of depreciation. Depreciation literally is magic, and I'm going to walk through in great detail how depreciation works. And depreciation is just so good. And it's called cost recovery in some countries. It has, you know, it has other capital recovery. It has different names in different countries. It's still the same thing, right? So number three. Like-kind exchange. This merely means the ability to sell a piece of real estate, a parcel of real estate, improved or unimproved, and reinvest the proceeds in another parcel of real estate, another property, and not pay tax. You're postponing the tax. You're kind of pushing it. You're kind of pushing that tax liability into the next property. Okay. So that's called a like-kind exchange. It has different names in different countries. In the U.S., it's frequently called a Section 1031 exchange. So if you've heard of a 1031, that's just the U.S. code section for a like-kind exchange. Many other countries have this same provision. It's just you have to follow the technical rules and to make sure you get it done right. Number four, debt. Debt is a major factor in creating your real estate tax benefits. And I'll walk through an example in a little bit about how to use debt to increase and multiply your tax benefits. So let's start with deductions. You know, we have to start with, we really have to start with the basics. So let's start with deductions. There are three rules to make something deductible. And these three rules are pretty much the same in most countries. I have not found a country where this was not, these were not the primary rules. First of all, you must have a business purpose. So that implies that you have a business. That's why I'm saying you have to have a business. And that's why professional investors do better, because they have a business purpose. This is the business purpose of the expense. Number two, it's a pretty easy test to meet. Number two, it must be ordinary. Now, that means that in your business, it is typical. So what's typical for a real estate investor is going to be different than what's typical for an accountant, right? You're going to have different expenses. So it has to be ordinary. And it has to be typical not just in what type of expense, but it also has to be typical in the amount and the frequency. So the amount and the frequency are also important. Number three, it has to be necessary. And necessary is really simple. That means it's profitable. The purpose of an expense is to create income. That's the purpose of an expense. So if you have an expense, the purpose isn't to create income. First of all, you shouldn't be spending the money from a business standpoint. And number two, it's not going to be deductible because it's not profitable. This is why the tax law is not just a series of incentives and a roadmap to reduce your taxes. If you follow this policy, you follow this policy of your expenses being business purpose, ordinary, and necessary, you will make more money. The tax law is a great way. You understand the tax law and you're doing things the right way for a tax law, you are going to make a lot more money than if you do things the way a lot of people do. They cheat, right? Well, they cheat on their business too. They never make that much money. I mean, some of them do, but it's pretty hard to cheat and make consistent money. It's so much easier. Just follow the rules and do what you're supposed to do. And one more thing is you have to document your deductions. You always have to document your deductions. Well, wouldn't you want to document that for a business? If you're a real business owner, don't you think you want to document? If you've been an employee, if you've ever turned in an expense report without the receipts, ever, and they said, okay, that's fine, we don't need your receipts. Maybe it was a small amount, like $10. Every company I've ever been in, I was an employee for 13 years. Every company I've ever been in, they want the receipts. Well, treat your business that way. Document it. So deductions, number one. Number two, this is the big one, depreciation. Now, depreciation is very simply a deduction for the wear and tear on the property. Property wears out. So if you've got this property over here, let's say you've got this warehouse over here, right? And it's sitting on this piece of land right here, right? And you think, okay, so what's going to wear and tear? Well, when you bought that property, you really bought four items. And the four types of items all wear and tear at different rates. For example, you bought the land. Land doesn't wear and tear at all. So the depreciation rate is 0% in every country. No, you don't get to depreciate land that you use for rental real estate. Now, you actually do get to do it if you pull minerals out or oil and gas. That's called depletion. But you don't get to do it if you're talking about rental real estate. What else did you buy? Well, of course, you bought the building. Well, buildings, they're going to last somewhere from typically 20 to 40 years. Right? So they're going to typically last 20 to 40 years. And so you're going to depreciate them over that time. Now, some countries have faster depreciation. Some have slower depreciation. We're going to talk about a particularly fast depreciation in just a minute here that we get in the U.S. and in many, many countries. So a building typically is going to be 20 to 40 years. Then what you have is you actually have the land improvements. So this is the lighting, this is the outdoor parking, covered parking, things like that, landscaping. Okay, typically that doesn't last so long, right? That typically you're going to figure is going to last about 10 to 20 years. So it's going to be depreciated over that period of time, deducted over that period of time. And then what you have is the contents. Light fixtures, flooring, window coverings, cabinetry. We know that that does not last nearly as long. And typically, that's going to be deducted over 5 to 10 years. And I'm giving you general numbers that are true in every country. Now, in our fast facts, you can go to and find the U.S. depreciation tables. Okay, so in our fast facts, we have the depreciation tables so that you can see the contents, land improvement, building, and land. Okay, well, land we know is zero. But you can see exactly how those are depreciated. And I'm going to go through an example, and it's just an example. So I'm going to use kind of generic rates in that example. The challenge that most people have is that when they give this, they buy a building and they go to their accountant, and their accountant decides, first of all, their accountant's deciding which is which. How much do they pay? Well, their accountant doesn't know. So what does their accountant do? They say, building, 80% of the purchase price, land, 20%. I see this allocation on 95% of tax returns of new clients. 95%. This is the allocation I see. Building, 80%, land, 20%. Well, that doesn't make any sense. What about land improvements and contents? They haven't done anything. Well, what do you have to do? What we have to do is we actually have to do a study. And the study is called a cost segregation. And a cost segregation is a study done by an accountant and an engineer. And the engineer goes through, they walk in and they're like, and they're looking at everything and they're kind of taking pictures and they're going all the way around. And what they're deciding is what proportion, they're deciding proportion. What proportion of the cost should be allocated to contents, land improvements, building, and they can't change land because you've already set it up at 20%. But they, if you do it at the very beginning, when you first buy it, they'll actually do land as well. So what proportion of the purchase price applies, you know, how do you value everything in the building and the building and the land? That's what a cost segregation does. I'm not going to go through the details of a cost segregation. I'm just going to tell you, you must have an accountant and an engineer working together. Because what's the accountant going to do? Now the accountant's going to decide what portion goes there, what's there, what's there. That's what the accountant does. Is the engineer is trying to decide, okay, what they're going to get really detailed. Then the accountant comes in and say, okay, this is a building for tax purposes. See, for example, in a residential property, a heating ventilation system, HVAC, is part of the building in the U.S. It may not be in other countries, but in the U.S., it's part of the building. So the engineer is breaking all the stuff out, but the accountant has to put it all together. So the engineer breaks it out, accountant puts it together, and creates a report, okay? And that report actually is what goes with your tax return. You actually put on your tax return all of this information. It's a huge benefit. Now, it's an even bigger benefit when you think of what the U.S. has and some other countries have as well, which is what we call bonus depreciation. Bonus depreciation is like nirvana. Okay, this is the holy grail. And the reason is that bonus depreciation looks like this. In the U.S., if your property has a useful life of less than 20 years, then your depreciation in the first year, if you choose, can be 100%. That means you're deducting it in the first year. So if you take your property here and you've got your warehouse, right? And you got your warehouse here and you got your land, right? Okay, guess what? Building land, no bonus depreciation. On the other hand, you've got contents and land improvements. And contents and land improvements are all less than 20 years. So they all get 100%. Let's look at the value here. Let's say that your warehouse, I can draw that warehouse again. Let's say you've got this warehouse over here and you paid $2 million for it. You paid $2 million for this warehouse. All right. So let's say that this is 40 years depreciation on the building. So you got your land down here. We're going to give this one some grass, right? You got some land down here and you paid $2 million. So let's say that you do what most people do and you say, well, okay, 20% equals land. So that equals $400,000. And 80% equals building. And that equals $1,600,000. And we're going to do that at 2.5% per year, because that's 40 years, right? 40 years. So 2.5% per year. All right, what's 2.5% per year? Well, it's not a whole lot. That equals $40,000 per year of depreciation. You're going, wow, that's still pretty cool. I get $40,000. Yeah, that's depreciation if you don't do a cost segregation. Now let's say you do a cost segregation. You do a cost segregation, and now instead, what you're likely to have, and these are rule of thumb. You have to actually do the cost segregation. You need an accountant. You need an engineer. Go out and do the cost segregation. I'm going to show you why it's going to be worth your while. You're probably going to end up with the same 20% land. You're probably going to end up with 50% building. You're going to end up with probably 20% contents. And you're probably going to end up with 10% land improvements. Now, these are really rough numbers. It could be higher, it could be lower. Normally, it's going to be higher than this. I'm giving you a very conservative example. So if 50% is a building, then that equals, right, $1 million, right, which at 2.5% is $25,000. So, I'm from 40 to 25, that's not good. 20% is contents. Remember, this is going to be bonus depreciation. That's $400,000. And 10% is land improvements. Again, bonus depreciation, that's $200,000. So my total depreciation by doing the cost segregation just went from $40,000 to $625,000 in the first year. From $40,000 to $625,000. Now you may say, I can't use $625,000. That's way more than my income. Guess what? You can pick and choose. You can say, look, I'm only going to pull my land improvements. I'm going to take $200,000 there, and my contents I'm going to depreciate over the normal 5 to 10 years. Or I could say I'm going to take my contents, and I'm going to take that bonus depreciation. I'm going to deduct the land improvements over the normal 10 to 20 years. So that's a great flexibility. Let's look at this. What does this mean in money? I always like going to the actual cash flow. So let's say that you're in that 40% tax bracket between state and federal. Chances are you're making decent money. You're probably in a 40% tax bracket. So that $40,000, so $40,000 times 40% is $16,000. That is money that the government is putting in your pocket. And that's if you do nothing. You do nothing but invest in the real estate, you get $40,000. $40,000 of deduction, which in a 40% bracket is $16,000. Now let's say you decide, I'm gonna take my depreciation, so I'm gonna take my contents, and then I'm gonna take my land improvements over 10 years or so. So I'm gonna end up with $450,000. Right? So let's say I take my land improvements, I'm gonna get about 10%, maybe a little bit more. So I'm gonna say that what I'm going to get is $250,000 times 40%. Now I just put $100,000 in my pocket. Let's say I go, you know what, man, I'm going to figure out how to use all of this. I'm going to take $625,000 times 40%, right? And what's that going to give me? That's going to give me about if I get this right, that's actually going to give me $250,000 of cash from taxes I would not pay. What could I do with that $250,000? Well, let's say that I have to put 25% down. I can take that $250,000 and combine it with $750,000 of debt. And what can I do? I can go buy a $1 million property just from the tax benefit. I haven't even started talking about the cash flow. The cash flow I'm going to leave to other educators, educators on other education courses on real estate. You can go through the cash flow. This is the tax benefit. Your cash flow on that $2 million property, even if you paid cash for it, is probably not more than, what, $200,000 a year at the most? At the most, if you borrowed on it, it's probably $100,000 a year. And from the tax benefit, you get $250,000. Now, what does that mean the second year? The second year, it means that your depreciation, if you take that full $625,000, that means your second year, your depreciation is going to be $25,000. So what are you going to do the second year? Well, but you got $100,000. You go buy another property. Go buy another property. Now you just got $250,000 of cash from tax savings. Go buy another property. You can keep buying properties just from the tax savings. So you keep buying properties. Use other people's money, invest, et cetera, et cetera. You can continue buying properties. This is the magic of depreciation. Now you're going, okay, some point you decide this warehouse, man, it is just, for whatever reason, I've got to sell it. I got to sell this warehouse. So what we're going to do is, and we've depreciated, we've depreciated right now, even after the first year, we've depreciated $625,000, right? So now my basis, if I sold it, I'd have to recapture that sum of that $625,000, not the whole thing, but I'd have to recapture some of it and pay tax on it. So what do I do? What I do is I do a like-kind exchange. Let's say, man, this warehouse is just, I think it's at a peak price. I don't think I'm going to make any more money on it. I want to sell it. So what we're going to do is we're going to take our warehouse and we're going to sell it. Well, what are we going to do with the money? Well, I want to use the money somewhere. I still like real estate. I just didn't want, it's just that particular warehouse. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go out and I'm going to go buy a big box. Okay. I'm going to go buy a Walgreens. That's a triple net lease. Man, that one's easy. I go buy a Walgreens or a Walmart or a Safeway or some other big box, right? So I sell and then I buy. We have to use, we have to follow the rules very carefully. Okay, there are very important rules. I'm not going to walk through all the details of the rules. What's important is, generally speaking, in every country that has a like-kind exchange, so the purchase what you're buying has to be greater than or equal to what you sold. You have to reinvest all the money, including all the debt. Okay, including all the debt. So the full purchase price, you need to reinvest. Now you can reinvest. It doesn't have to be in one box. You could reinvest if you wanted to. You could sell it and then you could invest in three properties or four properties. Or you could have five properties and reinvest in one property. So like-kind just means it's still real estate. Can be any kind of real estate. It does have to be domestic real estate. In other words, they don't, you know, the U.S., for example, doesn't want you going to the Caribbean, right? Or, you know, Canada is not want, doesn't want you to transfer into the U.S. So typically you're going to want to, it's going to be your country. If it's in your country, the new one has to be in your country. I'm not going to go through all the rules now. I'll save that for a later training. Suffice it to say, you can do this like-kind exchange over and over. Let's say I need money. Well, that takes us to our number four rule. What's our number four benefit of real estate? Number four benefit is debt. Why? Because debt is tax-free. When I borrow money, that is tax-free. Why? Because it's not mine unconditionally, right? I some point I have to pay it back. Either my tenants have to pay it back, or I have to pay it back. But somehow that money has to get paid back, so it's not taxable. So that's number one: is that debt is tax-free. Number two: in most countries, I get to deduct the interest. More importantly, amplify. It amplifies depreciation. Let me give you an example of that. Let's say that you have $200,000 to invest. Okay. If you pay cash, then what's your bonus depreciation? 30%, $60,000, right? Because you paid cash. Let's say instead that you go borrow $800,000. So you have debt now, you have $2,000 plus you have $800,000 of debt. And now what do you have? Now you have $1 million. Now your bonus depreciation $300,000. So debt will multiply your returns. From my standpoint, almost as important as multiplying your returns is multiplying your tax benefit. So you increase debt from multiply it by five times here, right? Because you bought five times as much building. Instead of buying a $200,000 building, you bought $1 million building. So your cash flow increases by using debt, and your depreciation, especially with bonus depreciation, includes enormously by using debt. So debt is a big deal. Debt is a big deal. So one of the big issues that people come to me about in the United States is what happens when we actually, how do we actually get to use these tax benefits? How do we get to use this $300,000 of depreciation? Let's say, because it's going to create a loss in my property, isn't it? Let's take our example. Let's go back to our example. Let's say that we have a $2 million building. Right? And let's say that it, after all expenses and after paying the mortgage and everything, let's say it produces $100,000. Let's make it better. Let's say it produces $150,000 of cash flow. Okay? Now, that's great. So I'd have $150,000 of taxable income before depreciation. Now let's say that my depreciation on this that we went through, remember, our depreciation is $625,000. So now we have positive cash flow of $150,000, but we have $625,000 of depreciation. So that means that we actually, for tax purposes, have a loss of $475,000. And we're going to put brackets. That means it's a loss, right? This is a loss for tax purposes. Well, how do I use that $475,000? I got my tax benefits against my cash flow. That I've already got my tax benefit because that $150,000 would otherwise be taxable at my 40% rate. So I got my 40% on the $150,000 of the depreciation. How do I get my 40% on the $475,000? How do I get the rest of my depreciation? This is the rule. The rule is that this loss is going to be considered in U.S. tax law as a passive loss. That's the general rule. And passive loss can only offset passive income. Well, we've already offset our passive income. Our passive income was the cash flow from the real estate. That's our passive income. This is passive income. So we've offset $150,000. I've got $475,000. It's a passive loss. I don't have any more passive income. What am I going to do? Well, it's going to carry over. So next year, it just carries over to next year. And it carries over the year after that, and the year after that, and the year after that. So it carries over forever until you sell the property, at which point it's all freed up. Okay, it's no longer passive. The year you sell the property, you get to deduct the whole thing, whatever's still being carried over. I don't want to carry it over. I want to use it now because I want that money now to buy the building, my next building, right? That's why I want the money. So I want to keep buying buildings. So what do? I take that passive income, that passive loss, and I go, okay, what are my choices here? My options would be I can either take my passive activity loss and turn it into active income. I'm sorry. It wouldn't be an active income. It would be an active loss. So I can turn it into an active loss. That would be one thing that, you know, logically, one thing that I could do to take advantage of that loss. If I could change the nature of it from passive to active, I could do that. The other thing I could do is I could take that passive activity loss. What I need to do is I'd actually need to find a passive income generator, a pig. So I need to find a pig. So where could I invest that money? What can I do to either create passive income or better yet, how could I convert some of my active income to passive income? So I could find a pig or I could create a pig. I can find a pig or create a pig. So I'm going to walk through these two options. And there are options for this. So one way or another, I'm going to show you that one way or another, you're going to be able to deduct your real estate loss from that depreciation, as long as you have income to offset, of course. First, let's start with this one. So if this is one and this is two, let's start with the first one. We're going to convert the passive activity loss to an active loss. And we have two possibilities of doing that. The first is what we call real estate professional. This is not to be confused with what we normally think of as a real estate professional. This is a tax designation of real estate professional, right? It's very specific in the law, and it's really a very simple calculation. A real estate professional is someone who their activity in real estate is greater than or equal to 750 hours. Plus, their real estate activity, plus their real estate activity is greater than all other business including employment. Combined. All other business combined. That's it. That's the rule. Either spouse can be a real estate professional. It does not have to be both. Either spouse doesn't have to be the one who earns all the money. So either spouse can be a real estate professional. If you're married, either spouse can be a real estate professional. So this is your get out of jail free card. There's, by the way, one other thing you have to do. And the other thing you have to do is there is an election called a section 469 C7 election. And you must make it on your tax return. And if your tax preparer misses this, you will not be a real estate professional, probably. You probably won't. What it does is it treats all of your properties as a single activity. Treats all your properties as a single activity because each activity must be greater than 500 hours. So in order for each activity to be greater than 500 hours, you need to combine all your activities. In order for each activity, probably, unless you got this, you know, big apartment building and you're managing the apartment building. Let's say you have four apartment buildings and they have a professional manager. Now, how do you, you know, you put in your hours. Okay, you're still managing the manager. You're still going out. You're doing things. You're very active, but you're not more than 500 hours on each building. Right? You may be 300 hours on each building. Well, 300 hours on each building isn't going to be enough because you have to be 500 hours on each activity. So you combine all the activities. So you take your three buildings and you actually treat them as a single building. And that's called the section 469 C7 election. Please be sure that that election gets made. I have seen a number of people forget to make that election, and there are a number of court cases, and the court is unforgiving. So you must make that election. That's real estate professional. Some of you are saying, I can't be a real estate professional. I'm single, and I've got a job, or I've got a business. Or I can't be a real estate professional. I'm married. My wife and I, we have a tough time being real estate professionals. Right? I'm an educator, she's an accountant, and it's really tough for one of us to be a real estate professional. So what's your next possibility? Your next possibility is what we call an active investor. Now, this one is actually pretty easy to meet from the standpoint of the IRS. Doesn't take 750 hours. It just takes some activity, right? So some activity, it could be you sign the note, you find the property, you buy the property. It doesn't have to be much. You're an active investor. You just can't be a limited partner, right? If you're only a limited partner, you're not going to make the active investor rule. But any other time, you're going to be fine. The other rule, though, is that your adjusted gross income, AGI, must be less than or equal to $100,000. That's the tough part. That's the tough part. It has to be less than or equal to $100,000. And what happens is that if it is less than or equal to $100,000, then you can up to $25,000 of losses are treated as active. Okay, so if you have $625,000, this isn't going to do you much good. You can get $475,000. If you're a real estate professional, you get the full $475,000. If you're an active investor, you get $25,000 out of the $475,000. Doesn't help you a lot. It helps the the small, you know, you're just starting out, you're buying a home or two, things like that. It helps. That's what it's for. That's what it's for. If you're, by the way, if you're over 100,000, if you're 100,000, okay, to 150,000, then this phases out. It's a phase out. So if this is where you think you're going to be, sit down with your accountant, determine either how to get your AGI down to $100,000 or what that phase out looks like. Okay, just take some time with your tax advisor for that. Now, those are the two ways to convert passive to active. So what if you can't do either of those? Your income's way too high, or you got way more than 25,000 and you can't be a real estate professional. What do you do? What you're going to do is you're going to create a pig. You're going to create a pig. I'm going to show you how right now. Chances are you have a business. If you're an employee, you cannot do this. If you just have employee wages, this is not going to work for you. You can invest in a pig. You cannot create a pig if you're just an employee. So let's say that you're Joe. Okay, and Joe has a business that is an LLC, taxes, and S corporation. And let's say that business has, after salaries, $200,000 of income. This would be active. Joe is full-time in this business. Let's say Joe also has, over here, three rental properties. And those three rental properties, together, create a $100,000 loss. This is devastating. I have a $100,000 loss over here. It is a passive activity loss. Joe, you're not a real estate professional. Your income's over $200,000. You cannot use this loss right now. You have to wait until you sell the property or you have other passive income. So you're going to pay tax on $200,000. Even if you have this $100,000 loss sitting over there, it's killing you. Well, Joe has something else. Joe has a daughter, and his daughter is Maggie. And Maggie, doesn't matter how old she is, because she could have a trust. She could be 2 years old. And Joe goes, I'd really like to set some money aside for her education. I'd like to set some money aside for her first house. I'd like to set some money aside for her to start a business. All sorts of reasons, set money aside. And I want to use my $100,000 loss. So what do I do? So Joe goes, well, what if I had Maggie own 50% of this business through her trust? And now I own 50%. Maggie owns 50% and I own 50%. Let's say also over here, we have Maggie own 75%. And Joe now owns 25%. Now, if you look at this, what have we done? This is active to Joe. To Maggie, these are both passive. So this is a pig, and this is a pal. So what do we have? So Maggie has $100,000 of income from her pig, and she has a $75,000 loss from her pal. So she's going to pay tax on $25,000. Okay. What happens to Joe now? Well, Joe now, his $200,000, now his $200,000 is only $100,000. So what is he eligible for? Active investor status. So he's got $100,000 here, but over here now he has a $25,000 loss. Guess what? His $25,000 can now offset that $100,000. He's an active investor. His AGI is now $100,000 or less. So now what he's going to do is Maggie's going to pay tax on $25,000. This is Maggie. And Joe is going to pay tax on $75,000, which means the total incomes being taxed is $100,000, which is, guess what? This minus this. Now Joe's using 100%, 100% of his real estate losses in the year that he first incurs those losses. And remember, these are all depreciation losses. These aren't cash flow losses. These are just depreciation. This is bonus depreciation. This is accelerated depreciation. Now Joe gets to use 100% of his losses. Why? Because he's setting aside money for Maggie's education through both the real estate and the business. It's being set aside. Does he have to give Maggie the money? Absolutely not. It's in her trust. It's in her trust. So he didn't have to give Maggie any money at all. So this is another way. If you can't be a real estate professional and your income is over the $100,000 or $150,000 limit, how do you get the loss? Remember, passive activity losses can offset passive activity income. So a PAL can offset the income from a PIG. We just create a PIG. We turned 50% of Joe's business into a PIG. It's passive to Maggie. She doesn't participate in the business. It's active to Joe. He now meets the active investor as well. Please be very careful with this. Do not do this on your own. I've used a very simple example here. Is it possible that loss is more going to be more or less than 100,000 next year? Yes. Is the income going to be more or less than 200,000 from the business? Yes. So we have to project this out. This is why what we do is we create a long-term tax strategy. And a long-term tax strategy simply does this. It looks at your lifetime. So your lifetime goes from here. It goes from today to your legacy. And it is a lifetime tax strategy. It covers your entire life, and it may cover multiple lives. It may cover your daughter's or your son's life, your children's lives as well, your grandchildren's lives. So that's why the tax strategy is so important. Real estate is, if you want to invest in real estate as your asset class, congratulations, because the tax benefits in real estate in every country are phenomenal. I've given you a few, just a few. There are other tax benefits to real estate I haven't even touched. Sit down with your tax advisor. Walk through each of the rules in order to make sure that you're maximizing your deductions, your depreciation, your 1031 exchanges, and your debt. And if you want money out of when you sell that property and you go, but I want some of that cash out, that's fine. Once you get into the new property, do a little refinance, pull some money out as debt because debt is non-taxable. Real estate is amazing. The more assets you have, the less tax you pay. This is how at Wealthability, we're always learning. It's just another way to make way more money and pay way less tax. See you next time.